Welcome to CAMS Cops Our Stories, the podcast series that delves into the unseen world of policing. In this episode, we're joined by Detective Inspector Lindsay Harbour, who talks to us about the process involved in investigating sudden deaths. From the methodical search at the scene to those telltale signs that something isn't as it seems, Lindsay explains what officers are looking for and the role they play in determining the circumstances of somebody's death.
So, Lindsay, when do police get involved in a sudden death, and what do the first officers at the scene do?
Okay, so police attend, I think people expect that we only attend murders, but police actually attend all deaths that aren't expected within the community. So if someone dies at home and they're elderly but it wasn't expected, we will attend. We also attend any suicides or any deaths where they are unexplained. So the reason for police attending is in the main to rule out any third party, any foul play or any suspicious circumstances. And once we're quite happy that there's no suspicious circumstances, we act on behalf of the coroner and we'll complete a coronial file ready for any potential inquest that might take place.
And when would a DI like yourself get involved? Because I assume that not all scenes require attendance by yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will attend, if there's any concerns by the attending officers at all, then we will attend to give advice and support. We will also attend if there's any suspicious circumstances. If there's any questions that are unanswered that the officers feel they can't get to the bottom of, and things like overdoses, we'll always attend just to rule out any foul play.
Okay, and how many scenes roughly would you say you would attend a week?
So it's quite a difficult one because we do the duty DI role. So one week you can go to none. For example, last year I went to 6 in 24 hours. I've been to 2 already this week and we're only on Thursday. So it can completely depend. There's just no answer to that one, really.
Well, 6 in 24 hours, that is some demand. What's that like for you over that period of time?
It is very demanding. It's emotionally draining. But you need to be there to support the officers and families. So it's kind of expected with our role, unfortunately.
And do you remember the first time you attended the scene of a sudden death? What was that like as a young officer?
Yeah, I do. So I was a special for a short amount of time before I joined the police. So I was probably only about 18. And it was a chap who had an epileptic fit in his bed at home. And I'll never forget it. I don't think you ever forget your first one. I don't think you forget any of them, actually. So it was odd because it was the first dead body I'd ever seen. But I think that you go there, that you do the job and you come away again and try not to think too much about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all of these deaths are a tragedy in their own way, but do you almost become desensitised to it?
I don't think you do. I don't think you can, because I think when you're dealing with the job, you try and take yourself away from it. You be professional and you do the inquiries you need to do. But I think always in the back of your mind, you know that there's families involved in this. You know you're going to pass that message on to them. You know you have to do the best for the deceased person. So I don't think you ever become desensitised. I think you probably take yourself out of the situation a little bit more, but never desensitised, I don't think.
No, okay. And at the end of a 24-hour period where you've attended multiple scenes...
Like this week. Yeah.
How do you switch off at the end of the day? Because you must put your head down at night and have these scenes going through your head, or do you get used to that side?
Yeah, I don't think you get used to it. I think you learn to cope with it. I'm a busy mum of 2 lads. Oh. There's a lot of football that takes place, a lot of trashy TV. And I think I'm so busy out of work that I just kind of I push it to the back of my mind until the next day.
And I assume lots of this you can't really discuss with your children or...
No, my children are uninterested anyway in what I do. But no, you definitely can't discuss it with people.
And do you have to think about your welfare? Because
yeah.
Obviously I think most people out there would probably be thinking this would get them down quite a bit if they were doing the same job.
Yeah, I think you do. And with experience, I think you do learn to deal with things, but we do have things. We've got TRIM, so trauma risk incident management. So if you go to a particularly traumatic incident, we do get referred to TRIM if you want it for any sort of counselling. We've got wellbeing champions you can speak to and colleagues. So there's always support there. But again, I think you just learn to deal with it. My biggest concern when I go to a job, I've been in for 22 years now, so I have seen a lot, I've dealt with a lot, and I can deal with it myself. But my biggest concern is the officers that are there and their welfare. So it's really important to check in with them to make sure that they're not struggling.
Yes, yeah. Is there anything personal that you do? I mean, exercise or just playing with your children? Or
no.
Any tips?
I've got a dog that I walk.
A glass of wine.
Sometimes. A glass of wine every now and then. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And just going back now to when you first got into this job, have you always wanted to be a police officer and particularly a detective, or was it something you moved into?
Yeah, I wanted to be in the fire brigade.
Really?
And I didn't get in, so I thought, well, what next? So I applied for the police and the rest is history. I think a lot of people are career detectives. They decide early on that's what they want to do. Very much for me, I love police and I like helping people. So for me, it was never about being a detective. I just kind of fell into that, really, and I'm just happy in the role I'm in now.
Yeah, and I mean, what would you say to people out there who are maybe considering policing as a career?
I would say do lots and lots of research. Know exactly what you're signing up for. A lot of the recent recruitment we've done, it's clear people that are coming in aren't really sure what they're going to be dealing with. I think people need to be aware. It is traumatic. It does impact on your personal life. And just do the research, really. But it's a great career. And I would recommend it to people if they were looking for a job that's going to help people with some variety. There's jobs within a job that you can apply for. So you can be a detective. You can go to traffic, dogs. So it is a good career.
Yeah. And was there anything in particular that inspired you? Some people say it was a family member. Some people say it was, you know, a TV program. Was there anything in particular that inspired you to become a...
I hate to be that person, but no.
No.
It was just because I didn't get in the fire brigade.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm quite happy it went that way because I love my job. But no, it was never for me.
Yeah. So just going back to scenes of crime and particularly sudden deaths, obviously people would have all seen the depictions on TV. There's not a night goes by when we don't have some kind of detective drama on. How does real life compare to those TV depictions of a sudden death and a investigation?
Yeah, so dramas are very much a drama. It is very rare. Some of the jobs you see where someone's died, it's very rare that they depict anything that's not a murder anyway on TV, because it wouldn't be interesting, I don't think, as a drama. But the things that make people laugh are when you have, for example, a high-ranking officer in an interview with someone, which isn't necessarily the case. So I do think they're quite good. I think they draw the line quite well with the sensitivity as to how we attend jobs. And I think they do depict it relatively well now, with officers attending, crime scene tape in place, scenes of crime, en route. Yep. So I do think they do quite a good job. Not necessarily accurate.
No.
But it's not too far off.
Okay. And is there a process that you go through at a scene? Just to be methodical.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always keep an open mind when I go to a scene, and there's regularly jobs that I go to where, you know, you'll hear something on the radio, and you as you're driving there, you've got a thought process to what you think might have happened. Your phone's constantly going. I tend to do checks on intelligence before I leave, so I know exactly where I'm going to find out a bit about the person, about the location, to see if we can kind of get a picture as to what might have happened. And then I always attend the scene, get a briefing from the officers to find out what we know so far. And if there's someone in situ in an address and we don't have to be concerned about anything, so the officers have been in, they've searched, there's no other people there, I will wait for scenes of crime to come before I go in. So that if there are any suspicious circumstances, we're not going to ruin our crime scene. But I always work with the building blocks. So looking at scenes, evidence, who's our deceased, if there are any suspects. I'm always thinking about forensics, any fast track actions, so tasking out house to house, CCTV. But for me, it's what have we got when we get there? What do I then know as the inquiries are coming in, and then reassessing it and starting again until we kind of get to the bottom of what might have happened?
Yeah, and Just you mentioned forensics. How important is forensics today?
I think it's very important. So for all suicides, a scenes of crime officer has to come out. So for families, that can be quite distressing because they don't understand. But essentially, we're there just to rule out that there's no third party involvement. We do have mercy killings where someone might be terminally ill, for example. There has been in the past across the country suicides that haven't been suicides. They've been covert murders that have been made to look like suicides. And I think certainly for families and for us, it's really important to know exactly what's happened. So forensics is really key, even if it's just taking photographs of the scene and documenting that for the coroner for any inquest.
That's interesting. Covert murders. Obviously, many sudden deaths will be non-suspicious. But what type of things would set alarm bells ringing if you were at a scene?
So I think it tends to be around what we know about the people. So if you've got any domestic history within the household, that would initially raise some red flags for me. When they were last seen, the state of the house, any injuries that the person might have, because some injuries come naturally. There might be some blood pooling, there might be some bruising. But any particular markings to the body, they might cause some concern for us.
Yeah, okay. And on a similar theme, are there times when things appear to be suspicious but turn out not to be? Are there any cases you can think of where we've had that?
Yeah, so I have had a couple, and one certainly sort of within the last 24 months, I had an incident where a person was found deceased at their home address. They had quite a few stab wounds. The property was insecure. So on first glimpse and sort of briefing from the officers, you think, oh God, this is awful. It sounds like it's going to be a murder. Yeah. But like we were saying about the initial assessment of scenes and getting there, getting the information, and the scene will present to you what has happened. And actually, I think it is a bit cliche, but the thing you think has happened is normally what has happened.
Right.
So for example, with this one, albeit there was numerous stab wounds and it did depict on the face of it a murder scene, when you look at all the history of someone with mental health problems, numerous suicide attempts, a lot of self-harm, some significant self-harm, the picture comes together and you realise actually it's not as it seems, and that was tragically a suicide.
Yeah, that's clearly a case where keeping an open mind
absolutely
is key. On the other side, are there any times when you've had a death that appears to be non-suspicious, which has then turned out to be suspicious?
I mean, I haven't personally, but I know they have happened. You know, there has been a couple recently where there has been some suspicious circumstances, not necessarily a murder, but there's some circumstances that have come to light that might be suspicious. But again, I think these are the cases where if an officer attends and they're unsure, they'd call a DI and we would come out and we'd assess what we've got and try to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, so that's the guidance for officers. Call a detective rather than necessarily recognising the scene as being suspicious themselves.
Yeah, I think any suspicions whatsoever, the officers will contact us and we will attend always.
Yeah. So are there any rules that you stick by, any sort of golden rules, such as not jumping to conclusions? You've mentioned that already, but are there any others that you stick by?
I mean, I think for me, like we've already discussed, it is letting the scene tell the story. So I never jump to conclusions, just keep an open mind at every job and just keep on thinking about your decision making, and as the evidence comes in, review what you've got, review what you've already been told, and then come to the conclusion. So yeah, for me it is very much about keeping an open mind.
Yeah, and there must be a lot of pressure there at the start, because as I understand it, there's a golden hour when you really need to gather evidence. Is that how it feels?
It does, very much so. And only this week when I turned up to a job, I had a couple of detectives with me, and I said, I got there, there's police cars everywhere, there was the ambulances there, and the pressure you feel, because I've been there as a PC myself many, many years ago, where a detective arrives and you think, oh, thank God they're here. We can relax a little bit now because they'll take over. So you do feel that pressure that everyone is waiting for you to turn up and sort of take over and make the decision. So it can be quite a pressurised environment. But again, I think as long as you're meticulous, as long as you're looking at the evidence and you take the time to gather what you've got, gather your thoughts, I think it always turns out all right in the end.
It sounds like a tough job. What keeps you, what motivates you in the mornings to come in?
I love my job.
Yeah.
I do deal with a lot of sudden death, and don't get me wrong, It does have an impact on you. I mean, I am very aware of my own mortality in the last 24 months. The amount of suicides have gone toward deaths. As you get older, I think you do start to panic a little bit that this could be you. But I think that really motivates you because you think you just want to do the best for the family and do the best for the person that's died, and just make sure you get answers for people, because there's nothing worse than leaving a scene or leaving a death and families not knowing what's happened. Mm. So for me, that is my motivation, especially in this realm of work.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Lindsay, for spending this time with us today and enlightening us on sudden deaths.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to CAMS Corp's Our Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can find new episodes and previous series. To keep up to date with the Force's latest news, follow us at CAMS Corp's on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.